Welcome to Sermons from First Presbyterian Church, Palo Alto. Each week, we share a recording of the Sunday sermon, offering theologically progressive, social justice-oriented reflections grounded in Scripture and what's happening in our lives and in the world. Most weeks, the sermon is preached by our pastor, the Reverend Tom Harris, and from time to time, we're joined by guest preachers. In this sermon from July 5th, 2026, Reverend Harris explains how the book of Exodus and the book of Deuteronomy give different reasons for observing the Sabbath. Exodus says, "We should observe the Sabbath because God rested on the seventh day of creation." Deuteronomy says, "We should observe the Sabbath so that others don't have to work for us." One is a theological reason. The other is a social justice reason. For those who do have the economic power to spend money in a way that causes others to work, the social justice reason may be even more motivating than the theological reason.
Thank you, Monica. First time as our liturgist. Thank you, Monica. That was great. And thank you, Andy, for that wonderful special music. Andy, on his study leave, was studying improvisation in France. And I'm wondering if that was one of the things he learned. So let's start today with a review of some of the assumptions that we've made in this series on the Ten Requirements. First of all, we've been looking at these primarily in the context of the Exodus story. These 10 requirements, and really the whole Torah, are given to a group of Hebrew slaves who have recently escaped from their enslavement in Egypt. And in that context, they are given an alternative, or even an antidote to life under the empire. The 10 requirements could be seen as a manifesto of liberation. In that spirit, they start with identifying a new authority to replace Pharaoh, and that new authority is God. However, the first three requirements put limits on how to think about God so that God does not simply become sort of a new spiritual oppressor in chief. So the first thing God does before offering the requirements is self-identify as Yahweh, which is a name that means something like, "I will be who I will be," or "I can't be defined with words." The only description then given of Yahweh is that Yahweh is a liberator. "I am the one who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery," period. Then we get the first requirement, "You shall have no other gods before me." So combine God's self-introduction and that first requirement, and we have something like, "Our highest good must be that nearly indescribable thing that sets us free." And not just free to be anything we want, but free to be exactly as God created us to be, to love ourselves, to love one another, and to love God. Then the second requirement, "Don't make images or idols," reinforces that this liberating God cannot be contained, defined, or imagined. And the third requirement, "Don't use God's name lightly," is really a similar caution, reminding us to engage this unnameable, mysterious God who is to be the new centerpiece of a liberated community with reverence and with awe. God is free, God makes us free, and that is awe-inspiring. With all that in mind, the word commandment, which is usually used to describe this list of principles, communicates a very authoritarian relationship with God that I believe this manifesto of liberation is seeking to overcome. So instead of the Ten Commandments, I'm calling them the Ten Requirements, in the way that a plant has certain requirements on an organic level in order to thrive. A plant requires sunlight, water, nutrients, soil, and so do we as people and as a community have requirements about our relationship with God and with each other. These requirements must be met if we are going to thrive. So with that context, we come to the fourth requirement, remember or observe the Sabbath. So far in this series, we've talked almost exclusively about the Exodus version of these 10 requirements, but as we said, there's this other version in the book of Deuteronomy. It's almost identical, the 10 requirements are almost identical between the two books, except here in the fourth commandment, where there's a significant difference. The first word is different, which isn't such a big deal. One is observe and the other is keep. One is remember and the other is observe or keep. And that's really about the same thing. But the biggest difference between Exodus and Deuteronomy comes in the motivation that's given for observing the Sabbath. In Exodus, it says that we should have practiced the Sabbath because that's what God did when God created the universe. In 6 days, God made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore, God blessed the Sabbath and consecrated it. So the Sabbath, according to Exodus, is this temporal, divine, cosmic reality. It's part of the cycle of time itself, established as part of God's creation of the universe. When we rest one day out of seven, we imitate God and we participate in that divine cycle. Now, Deuteronomy was written after Exodus. The author or authors of Deuteronomy knew what Exodus said, which means that they consciously changed the motivation for the Sabbath observance. They changed it from aligning with this cosmic divine reality to following a social justice imperative. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to Yahweh your God. You shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, ox or donkey, livestock, resident alien in your town, so that your male and female slave may rest as well as you. So let's unpack all that. For one thing, it's clear that this is written to a people who have power and privilege. It is written to people who own slaves. It is written to people who own livestock. It is written to people who are residents of their town, because it refers to the alien residents in your town. Therefore, it implies that these powerful, privileged people don't need a special day of rest for themselves because they have people who can work for them. In that culture, the slave owner can rest or at least do white collar work while they make the slave do all of their real labor. And those laborers might be slaves or they might be immigrants or both. But one day a week, the privileged have to stop their white collar work so that those they are bossing around can stop working too. Now, the implication for us today is that one of the primary things that we should be avoiding once a week as part of our Sabbath observance is making other people work. That is, one day a week, we should not be spending any money. We should not go out to eat and thus cause the restaurant workers to work. We should not go to the grocery store and cause the grocery store workers to work. We should not order things from Amazon and make the Amazon warehouse workers work and the delivery people work. The inclusion of the animals even suggests that our incessant activity has harmful consequences for the non-human world as well, for the earth, for creation. Stop working and give the planet a break as well. Of course, we recently remember that on May 1st, there was the national economic blackout where no one was supposed to shop, spend any money, and we were all going to show our unity and collective economic power. But they stole that idea from the Old Testament. For thousands of years, Deuteronomy's version of the fourth requirement said that we should have an economic blackout once a week. Now, I'm not talking about blue laws here. Anybody ever know what blue laws are or experienced, lived at a time of blue laws? Blue laws are those old laws that require stores to close on Sundays. When I was at Clemson, there were still blue laws in effect on Sundays. Everything was closed. But I don't think we can do that. I think it's good that those have gone away, because we live in a religiously plural society, so we shouldn't require everything to close only on the Christian Sabbath. However, in our personal spiritual practice, we should absolutely try to observe a day of rest once a week, both for the purpose of honoring divine time and limiting the ways our activity causes people with less power than us to work. Now, Sabbath practice is not easy. You might think it is just being told to relax one day a week, but we are so addicted to activity that it's actually hard for us to do that. I preached a sermon about Sabbath in February 2025, and I seriously thought about just re-preaching that sermon because it was still completely relevant today. One of the things I talked about was how hard it is to maintain a Sabbath practice in a society like ours where we don't have a community that has agreed on what is allowed and what is not allowed. I have a certain amount of holy jealousy for observant Jewish communities where the rules of what you can do and what you cannot do are clearly defined and everyone agrees and everyone kind of supports each other in that practice. But for the rest of us, we're kind of left to figure this out on our own. What activity will we do on a Sabbath? What will we refrain from doing? How do we respond when some responsibility or obligation comes up that requires us to do something that we were trying to refrain from doing? Maybe we're trying not to drive on the Sabbath, but then that thing for family or work comes up that we have to drive to. Saturdays were often a good day for me to practice the Sabbath. They still are. And I do try to refrain from driving and shopping when I do it. I don't always, sometimes I do a Saturday and I'm not thinking about the Sabbath, but sometimes I'm like, I'm going to do a Sabbath this Saturday. But when my daughter was in high school and playing travel softball, there was no way to get out of driving and spending money on a Saturday when the tournament was 2 hours away and it was an all-day tournament. So it's not easy. I mean, I could have like said, oh, our family's going to bring our meals, and when the team goes out to dinner afterwards, we're going to have dinner for ourselves. Or I could have just been like, I'm going to sit outside the restaurant with my sandwich all by myself because I'm Sabbath. So it's not easy. But if we're looking for motivation, if we're looking for motivation as we sort out our Sabbath practice in this day and age, the idea of refraining from economic activity one day a week is something that should be in the mix of our discernment. It was important enough to the authors of Deuteronomy that they made the decision to change this one part of the Ten Requirements, to change it from this divine cosmic motivation for honoring the Sabbath to this social justice economic motivation. We're supposed to practice the Sabbath so others can rest, especially the economically marginalized. Now, I know those who are economically marginalized also need work so that they can earn money. Some people work multiple jobs 7 days a week so that they can make ends meet. But I think we can't pretend that going out to eat or ordering from Amazon is some kind of benevolent act on our part. Like, I am blessing you workers with the opportunity to serve me today. You're welcome. At some point, we have to put limits on our spending. And we make decisions about what is the right amount of activity. When we do that, we have to appeal to an authority higher than capitalism. The idea that we will spend money in order to help the poor people is really just a miniature version of trickle-down economics. It's also true that we may just be putting off for one day that trip to Home Depot or IKEA. So have we really made a difference? But I think we might be surprised how much a 24-hour waiting period can help us to evaluate whether we really need to make that trip at all. The other element of Deuteronomy's version of the Sabbath requirement is that the Hebrew people are to remember that they were once slaves. So they are told to rest their slaves because they were slaves and they know what that was like. Of course, it doesn't go as far as to say, you were once slaves, you know what that was like, so stop making other people slaves. How quickly we can go from being the liberated to being the oppressor, right? Actually, there is very little in the Bible that speaks against slavery as a practice. For the most part in the Bible, slavery is assumed as a practice and as an institution, which is a good reason, a good example of why we do have to pick and choose. People say you can't pick and choose in the Bible. We do have to pick and choose which parts of the Bible are going to be primary and authoritative for us and which are not. So when it comes to slavery, where the Bible speaks mostly of small reforms, we have to, as Christians, have to speak of abolition. But if we put that conversation about the slavery thing aside and go beneath the motivation in Deuteronomy's version of the fourth commandment, that is to allow slaves to rest because the Hebrew people were once slaves, what we find there is a little incipient version of the golden rule. Treat people the way you would want to be treated. And it's the same idea for all of us when we think of homelessness. We're all just a couple disasters away from being homeless, every one of us in this room, and therefore we should treat homeless people with kindness. Or because our ancestors were immigrants to this land, we should remember that remember that when we decide how we're going to treat immigrants. And because we could become immigrants. We like to think that we are immune to that here in the U.S., that we'll never have to be an immigrant, but crazy stuff could happen, right? The supervolcano under Yellowstone National Park could erupt, as it does from time to time, and make the U.S. uninhabitable, and suddenly we are fleeing to South America. Wouldn't that be a turning of the tables? The point is that what Deuteronomy does in making this change is to put the spirit of the golden rule at the center of the Sabbath requirement. Behind all the Sabbath requirement and all the requirements is this principle that we treat others the way we would want to be treated. Now, the last thing I'll say about the fourth requirement is that when it comes to trying to practice the Sabbath, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Just because we can't practice a perfect Sabbath doesn't mean we can't incorporate some elements of Sabbath practice into our lives and into our week. So see if you can find some time each week to set aside for rest, or to see if one whole day can involve some kind of limit to your activity, to your spending. How is that one day going to be more in line with the cosmic rhythms of work and rest? And how is it that one day going to be a day when we work less? And importantly, when we make others work less. How is that one day going to be a day when we think about how we would want to be treated if we had less power? And therefore, how are we going to treat others? Amen.
Thanks for listening to sermons from First Presbyterian Church, Palo Alto, located at 1140 Cowper Street in Palo Alto, California. If you'd like to worship with us, we gather Sundays at 10 a.m., both in person and online. And you can find more information about our congregation, worship, and ministries at fpcpaloalto.org. We hope to see you soon.